The red flag is taken away. 25 laps. The Grand Prix of Catalonia is underway.
Held them a little bit on the front row.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 323 for Wednesday, the 13th of June, 2012. My name is Jim Race. I am in Northern California along with my Northern California compadre, Jules Cisek. How you doing, Jules?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Joe?
Awesome. It's been another busy weekend. We got a bunch to talk about. As some of you folks out there might know, I've got a real job. Now, kind of again, which is taking up a bunch of my time. So I haven't been able to keep up with all the races. It's been a bit, but between the two of us, between the three of us as well, with Martin, who's jetting off to Silverstone this weekend for GP, we managed to get everything covered. So we're probably going to play a little ping pong here with the race stuff, and we'll see if we can't give you guys enough to keep you satisfied until next week.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So we're just going to dive right into this, Jules. I think that's the best way to do it. We did get some very interesting listener feedback this week.
Yep.
And Doug Edmonston, it was funny because he missed episode, 321?
Yeah. Yeah. He missed it. He was like, wait a second. What happened? Because we were posting 322. And he's like, wait, what was 321?
That was our Saturday episode after a very busy week for both of us. This is tough, Jules, when both you and I have these crazy jobs. We're doing our best, folks.
Yeah. There was so much on top of that, the job, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like family stuff for me as well. So,
wasn't there a race in there somewhere?
And there was a lot of racing.
Yeah. Anyway, Doug wrote in again, and this is actually kind of timely in a way. I guess I want to preface this. Let me preface it, Jules, by saying there was a very interesting article this week in Autosport. Actually, I think it came out today.
Yes.
Today being today. Tuesday. And this isn't anything we really didn't know about. In fact, it was an interview with Carmelo Espeleta, who runs Dorna. Essentially, what he said was that the rookie rule, which a lot of people have called the Ben Spies rule in the past, which might be kind of applicable, is much like the rest of the rules that we see in MotoGP these days, a little bit flexible. It could be flexible. And very specifically, he spoke of Repsol and HRC. Everybody's been wondering with Casey's retirement. We know that today I am going to jump into this, Jules, because I think it's important before we talk about what Doug said. We know that today that Jorge Lorenzo signed a 2-year contract with Yamaha. So he's going to be there for another 2 years, which, as you mentioned and everybody has mentioned, is a huge deal because it starts the dominoes, right?
It's so early. It's amazing. It's amazing. I have to think that Lorenzo got an amazing offer from Yamaha. Yamaha just went straight to their financial guys and went, look, we don't want to even have to fight with HRC. Yeah. I think this is what we're just going to take to have Lorenzo for two more years. We know he loves the motorcycle. He wants to be with us on the team. Let's make it work.
Yeah. And I think it was wise for both of them. Clearly with Casey heading to the ranch. Who knows what else shuffling is going on, because there's a lot of other riders, as we know, and you listeners out there know, that their contracts are expiring at the end of the year, that silly season is going to get nuts and bidding is going to go crazy. And who knows? So you're right. You know that Jorge got a smoking deal. Yep. And so this leads into what Doug was talking about. Oh, so I need to back up a little bit, finish the story about the Autosport story. In the end, what Espeleta said was, and this is absolutely true, 100% true, is that all Repsol has to do, or Honda has to do, is, in more or less words, Jules, he said, do what they've been doing in the past, which is have a semi-factory team, a factory bike on a satellite squad.
Right.
And they could bypass the rookie rule. I mean, the rookie rule, it's been bypassed before, right? We've had plenty of factory bikes on satellite teams, and solid satellite teams. No doubt that Simoncelli on the LCR was a
Grassini, you know,
Or Grassini, I'm sorry, was a force to be absolutely reckoned with.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And so, I think
the bigger problem here is not my take on what Espeleta said was like, look, we have the rookie rule there to help the satellite teams, but if it actually is going to hurt them, we're not going to force this rule to continue if it actually hurts the satellite teams. And the way it would hurt them is because of sponsorships.
Sure.
You know? Yep. Go ahead.
But you know what? You and I could sit here and talk because silly season has officially kicked off now.
Well, it kicked off the moment that Casey announced his retirement, right? Because suddenly there's this... one of the most coveted seats in MotoGP is suddenly kind of unexpectedly open.
Let me rephrase that then. It shifted into overdrive.
Yeah.
Casey's vacancy basically set up the dominoes. Lorenzo Sonning pushed the first one over.
Yeah.
And so now you watch where they're going to fall. But, you know, we're so used to, Jules, the earliest anything happens as far as signings goes, and lately it's been going later and later, and certainly this, you know, 2011 was nuts, is usually Laguna, after Laguna, in the summer break.
Yep. Or even later. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, last year was just insane.
it's like this year's trying to make up for last year, you know? Let's just get a little bit done. Right away.
so we can enjoy Christmas and not have to worry about where we're going to ride. Anyway, back to Doug Edmondson's email. Doug says, about that whole Marquez thing, definition of conspiracy, Catalan rider with a Catalan sponsor at a Catalan track with a Catalan FIM steward and the might of HRC and Repsol behind him. Personally, though, I think Marquez was definitely in the wrong for just cutting back onto the racing line after basically crashing. I don't know how many times it's been drilled into my head at track days and races. You just don't cut back onto the racing line after running off or whatever without looking to make sure it's clear. Not at a track day, not at a club race, and definitely not at a world-level championship where the riders should know better. The end of that sentence I'm going to disagree with, but I'll carry on. Mm-hmm. Not at a track... He says, I don't think he did it on purpose. I just don't think he thought about it at all when doing it. Just did what he wanted to do, which was to get back on the racing line. And then he does have somewhat of a history of stuff like that back in the CEV. I forget when, but I'm pretty sure he did receive a couple of race suspensions when he was riding for the Monlau competition at 125 team for basically the same thing. Ran off the track and cut right back on the racing line without looking. Then again, Marquez is the only person who will know what was or wasn't going through his mind then. And to me, Jules, what was going through his mind was, shit! Yeah. Or, merde! No, wait, that's French. What's Spanish for shit?
Ooh, I don't know.
Somebody will write it and tell us.
Lempadilla will get it to us first.
It's worth a sticker. No. It's possible he just completely forgot about another rider around and was too distracted about having just saved that crash. I know I've been too distracted about a crash one time that I just walked up to my bike to kick it without even thinking of getting away from the track due to other riders. But in my defense, my bike needed a good kicking.
I love that. This obviously is referring to the incident between Paul Espargaró and Catalunya last week.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. And I was talking with some folks in the know about this because I guess I mentioned this on the show before, but it definitely reminded me of the crash that Johnny Ray and Eugene Laverty had back in what was the name of that Spanish track? I forget. In World Supersport when Eugene was running wild cards for Yamaha, and he took a kind of a you remember that? What was the name of that track? I think Josh Hayes ran at that race too. That was his first World Supersport race. Anyway, it was one of those ones where Eugene took a 250 line, Ray took a superbike line, and they basically just both ended up at the same place at the same time. It wasn't a crash that occurred, but in the end, what happened was Johnny on the inside ended up getting the short end of the stick, and he crashed out. Eugene went on to podium. And much like also the Donington World Superbike incident. So there's –
well,
it was
that too, and you know, I mean, there's the Simoncelli Pedrosa incident at Le Mans, you know, last year. So
I think these are things where people affix blame based on their allegiances.
Yes. I do agree with that, although I also think that Doug is absolutely correct in that Marquez does have a history of this, and that does get, you know, some weight, but in race direction they don't erase their memories at the beginning of every race. You know, it's kind of like buildups. For those of you who are following the Euro 12 Cup, you know, and follow soccer or football as it's called in the rest of the world. It's the same kind of thing with where you get yellow cards, you know, in the beginning it's, you can get away with some shit, you know, but the referee's like, look, I warned you, dude, you're doing the same shit. I'm going to give you a yellow, you know? And I think that, that's basically what the race direction did. I did find the overturning strange, but I was also really happy to see it because I thought that it would have been terrible to penalize Marquez for that move, you know. And the reason why this is so kind of interesting timing wise, because, you know, we obviously had that incident in Catalonia with Marquez, and now, and there's been so much talk about, you know, what's going to happen to Marquez with Stoner gone, and now Espeleta is talking about the rookie rule being flexible. David Emmett had a really good article on Moto Matters about when he had an interview with Lucio Cicinello about the rookie rule, and Cicinello, who loves the rookie rule because he's had some, I mean, he got brattle, was saying, you know, yeah, it's great, except that there's this fly in the ointment, which is that Marquez is coming with the Repsol sponsorship, which means that if he goes to a satellite team, Repsol is going to knock out whatever, you know, sponsors LCR or Gresini might have, which will then, and it's just for a year, right?
Right. You sever a relationship that you've worked years to, like, you know, Jivy or something like that.
Yeah, and those guys really have to work hard. I mean, we know Lucio Cicinello is like the master. Both of those guys, actually, Gresini and him, have somehow managed to stay alive during a very difficult period.
I think Lucio throws the best parties.
That's probably why. So that kind of ties us back. And I just want to say, Doug, don't kick your bike, dude. All right.
And keep it up with the formulas. I'm still chuckling at that whole thing. Hopefully he's gone back and listened to 321 at this point. That's a very good one. And, you know, frankly, as we mentioned during that whole soliloquy, Jules, it's the silly season is going to be interesting this year, but it would be amazing if it was, you know, 95% solved by, or 90% solved. It will never be 100% solved by the end of the season, because there's going to be a lot of teams, especially CRT teams, guys looking to get onto, you know, satellite teams or move around and see who comes up,
right,
and see who's healthy too at the end of the season.
This actually does, because everybody's contracts are ending this year.
Yeah.
It actually does force some things to happen a little bit earlier, because I think that there's going to be a lot of, now that, with the early retirement announcement from Stoner and now Lorenzo's signing, there's going to be a bit of a scramble. And there is a lot of question marks, because Ben Spies is having a really rotten start to the year. Now, granted, I think the Catalonia round was a fluke. I mean, it's not a fluke in this season because he's had a shitty season, but I think he was back and he just got really unlucky.
Yep.
And I think basically Ben is going to be fine for the rest of the season. But, you know, Cal and Dovi both want that seat as well.
But you know what's interesting is we'll have to see what happens. And you really wonder, or at least I wonder, What is going to happen as the season progresses and the factory Yamaha gets their new bits, right? And how much of that gets passed down to the Tech 3 squad? Now, I'm pretty sure that after last year, Honda taking the manufacturer's championship, that Yamaha wants it back. And they're certainly doing well by having the Tech 3 squad finish the way they've been finishing, right?
Yeah.
And it, because Ben's been having such a tough year. It will be interesting to see if, because this would be unusual, Jules, you know this, to see if they keep the Tech 3 squad at the same level all year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Yamaha as a factory, you mean?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, those
that's
those,
a really good point, because as much as it, they must sweat, you know, the possibility of Tech 3 beating their guys.
Right.
They must also be just totally chuckling with glee about how well the Tech 3 is running.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a tough balance to strike, because those are both really good riders, obviously. And if you give them the same equipment, they might end up beating Lorenzo in a couple of rounds and taking points away from him. So, yeah, tricky. Tricky. And especially for next year, where nothing is known.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fun. I like it.
Yeah, well, I also, you know, it's so tempting to start to make predictions about what's going to happen this silly season. And, like, we're not going to do this show. I'm just going to say it right now. I'm not going to go down that road, even though I started to on the Facebook page. I'm going to stop because we have another series to talk about, and this is a good topic for when we have a little bit of a break and we know more.
True. Well, you know what? I think the show that we do after Laguna, or the one after Laguna, would probably be a very appropriate time to talk about that, because we'll know an awful lot more. We'll still talk about it between now and then. We can't help ourselves, can we?
No. Speculation is fun.
Yes. All right. What else do we have?
Well, we got an email from Mike Moynihan.
Yep.
And he wrote in, I know that you have talked to Josh Hayes a few times this year. Next time, ask him any possibility of a wild card ride. I'm going to stop here with the email because you talked to him at Miller, and we didn't get that interview because your recorder failed. But you did ask him about this specific thing, right?
I did. Actually, Josh and I had a very long talk Sunday afternoon at Miller after his second win of the weekend, where he was running times that would have been quite competitive in World Superbike. And we did talk about it. And one of the first things I posed to him after we discussed where his lap times would have put him was, you know, what were the chances of him getting back into World Superbike, either as a wild card or perhaps as a full-time rider? And secondarily, did he consider or did he think that his age would provide or cause a speed bump that might keep him from being in that series? He's certainly got strong backing right now from Yamaha USA, which is a big part of what propelled Ben Spies into World Superbike and his world championship in his first year. Amazing. But he does have another year on his contract through 2013. And he does love, he said he, you know, he loves working with Yamaha USA. They were, you know, for years and years, Jules, he was trying to get a superbike ride. And he was kicking ass in Formula Extreme. He was kicking ass in Supersport. And for whatever reason, he couldn't get a superbike ride. And then he finally did on the Graves Yamaha and kicked ass. And in between there, he had a few rides in World Supersport and kicked ass there too. Who can forget Portimao with the infamous girly swing from Keenan Sofuaglu? Right. Because Josh was dicing up with him for the podium.
Yeah,
and you know, we look at last year Valencia. Granted, tricky and dodgy conditions, but he still came in seventh for a wild card on a bike you'd never seen, and he hadn't even been training or riding really. And so it's a totally valid question. And he, you know, he said he'd love to do it. And, you know, it's a question of timing, because when you, I doubt, well, first off, I doubt that Yamaha USA would want him to do a bunch of wild cards because he's smoking in the AMA championship this year and they'd love to win another superbike title. If there were ones that didn't conflict, I wouldn't be overly surprised if they let him go do it. If it worked, if it was something that he wanted to do and he felt that it was within his schedule, but the guy trains like a madman and travel is going to take something out of you. So
yeah,
it's interesting. Now, 2012, should he garner another superbike title this year? Maybe they'll be more flexible. And I don't see them releasing him. And I don't see Josh popping over there unless he, and he said this too, unless he's got himself a guarantee of a really solid ride. And I think if he went over, he'd prefer to go over on Yamaha, but there's no Yamaha team over there right now.
Yeah.
And I don't see him going.
He also has a very, very deep sense of loyalty.
Absolutely. Really yeah. does. He really does. I do hope that he does get the opportunity to get back on either a World Superbike to get on a World Superbike, period, or to get another wildcard ride in MotoGP. I suspect that if he continues what he's doing this year in AMA Superbike, we'll see him in one of the Premier Series before the year's up.
Excellent. Excellent.
Anyway, so Mike does carry on with all the talk of the silly season this year already, though Lorenzo did sign today, which you and I talked about. Why no talk of Johnny Ray? The way I remember it, with Johnny's last two contracts on World Superbike, Honda said, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, stay with us. And if you do well, MotoGP is there for you. Which is interesting, Jules. I think his performance has been stellar this season, amplified if you look at how old the bike is and the relative performance of Aoyama. Aoyama is a world champion and can do little with the old Honda, and he puts in parentheses, and I'm a huge Honda fan, sorry, Jim, which I don't get, Jules, because I like Honda.
You're not a hater.
No, I'm not a hater. So he says, so what's up with Ray?
It's a good point, and it is true. I do believe that Ray was talking about wanting to move to MotoGP, and, sure. You know, as far as his performance this year, I mean, I don't think he could do more. I mean, he is riding his freaking heart out on that thing.
The Honda is much like the GSXR 1000. It's a bike that hasn't had a lot of updates.
Right.
And so as time moves on and teams move on and money flows where it does.
And BMW figures their shit out.
And continues to do so, how much of the burden is on the riders? How much of the burden is on the teams? Hard to say. A big part of it, Jules, that I think we're all waiting for, that would probably, this goes without saying, but I think it should be said anyway. When the economy picks up to where it benefits racing again, and we can get building parity into these series, based on having all the manufacturers have relatively equal bikes, when some of the manufacturers aren't able to produce bikes or able to stay up at the front, creates a very unique situation, and one that will untangle itself by itself economically when things pick up. And what we hope is we don't end up with some sort of weird little dichotomy of teams that suddenly have money to spend, and the teams that had done all the technical wizardry to get their bikes competitive once again, even if they were a little bit behind the times as far as technology goes, fall behind. It'll be weird if that happens.
Yeah, and I agree. And you know, I'm the pessimist in the group, and you're the optimist, because I actually think that by the time things do get better for Johnny Ray to actually be able to get a ride that doesn't exist right now,
right,
he's going to be too old. I mean, it's going to be, you know, 5, 6, 7 years before that really is going to happen. I think that MotoGP is heading in the CRT direction, and only when it's fully CRT will it be what you're talking about, or the economy recovers and we have, you know, much more factory support. Because remember, we're going into a 4 bikes per factory maximum next year.
Well, Okay, so here's a secondary question to ponder.
And there's an incredible amount of Moto2 talent.
That's true.
Someone's gonna win the championship. You know, they're gonna get moved up to the MotoGP if Espeleta has his way. So it's gonna be really tricky to get a guy to come from Superbikes. And you know, last week it was Evil. He's Evil at Martin was talking about Julian Ryder talking at the Day of Champions to Eugene Laverty and saying, "Well, you know, you're beating MotoGP has-beens." You're not even beating MotoGP has been. So I think it's going to be very hard for Charlie Ray, frankly, even though he is obviously a very talented rider. He needs a little bit more consistency. He needs to prove himself on a better machine. You know, maybe he can get a CRT ride. Maybe he can get a satellite ride.
Well, okay, so
let's see him on the wild card. Let's get him on the wild card.
That would be way cool. Frankly, it would be nice if he was out there this weekend. Silverstone is a track that suits him. one thing that I think that we're missing here, Jules, a piece of the puzzle that we have a tendency not to think about because things are a bit skewed at the moment, is that the CRTs of today are not going to be the CRTs of next year. The teams are going to figure things out. And if they don't, Carmelo is going to figure things out for
them.
Right,
exactly.
And I suspect that a lot of it is going to be the teams. And as the year goes on, I don't know if my prediction for a CRT on the podium is going to come true, but I'm glad I didn't put any money on that. you still never know. Still never know. I can keep saying that until Valencia rolls around, can't I? The situation by the end of the year, you might, you know, we talk now like everybody wants to get the hell out of CRT, right? I think the truth of the matter is going to be a little bit different in the end of the year when not only are those teams quote unquote up to speed, no pun intended, but if they're not, there are going to be changes that are going to be enacted. And we already know some of those are coming down the pike and it's been publicly well talked about and bandied about, that those rides may become more attractive. And to where a CRT is a stepping stone, or if you're a real, you know, top guy, a satellite team or a factory satellite team, if you will, which makes me wonder why Espeleta did say that to Autosport, because in a way, right now, there's four tiers, right? There's CRT, satellite, factory, satellite, and factory. It's something we haven't had before. There's been three tiers in the past. Some people could say that the satellite duck was the CRT of the... Oh, dear, I'm going to get in trouble for that. but I think you see my point. It's interesting which stepping stone that your foot lands on. And so where does somebody like Johnny go? I don't know.
It's a very, very good point. Right now the CRTs really are like a separate series running, no matter, you know, they're even being treated like that.
Sure.
With the visit to the Parc Fermé, you know, and the extra coverage of the TV crews obviously are asked to give them. So, but yeah, you're right. No, it's they're not gonna be, and you know, I don't want to jinx the series saying that, you know, the factors are kind of gonna start pulling out, because I don't think they will pull back.
Yeah.
But given how quickly the Moto2 guys figured out the chassis, basically it took a season, and then by year two we had a real fight. It wasn't just random, kind of random craziness. I mean, it was still enjoyable that first year, though. Don't get me wrong, but 2011 was a completely different Moto2 year, and So I think you're right. I think that there may be a spot for guys like that there that isn't considered a, you know, well, let's just see if this thing can make it around the track for, you know, 28 laps.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree. I agree. Well, so I cool. mean, but part of the silly season too, Jules, is near the end of the year. Are we going to see, because, for example, and I don't see this so much now because they haven't been so successful this season, but, you know, Crescent Suzuki was talking about stepping up to MotoGP. There was a lot of talk of that. Yeah. Are we going to see teams?
And there's that, you know, and there's that Suzuki being tested, possibly a prototype. So,
well, I've heard that might actually wild card once or twice this year.
Oh man, that'd be awesome.
And perhaps not as a CRT.
Wow. Wow. Well, I guess it would have to probably. Right. So, I mean, the thing is that, so Ray has stuck with Honda since he, since he's been, I mean, he was, was he ever on anything but Honda, even in Super Sport?
No, I don't believe so. And I'm trying to think back to his BSB days, and I'm pretty sure he was a Honda guy for the most part back then.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really, well, I would rather see Honda go, we owe this guy, and look, we could actually win at a world championship at World Superbikes if we actually gave him a real bike. And the other thing is that he should just maybe look for another team. I mean, there's so many teams in Superbikes that would love to have him.
True.
You know.
It's true. He's what you would call a volatile rider.
He is. And, you know, and I'm not the biggest fan of his volatility and aggressiveness and stuff like that. But he gets the results, and he's definitely an exciting rider to watch. How old is he now? He's probably like 24, 25.
I'm thinking, yeah, probably 25, maybe 26.
And
when's your birthday, Johnny? Right into us.
Right. So anyway, enough about that. I also want to give a big shout out to Edward Ceramella, who's in the Bay Area. He's passing through he was here for a few weeks with a new gig. And we got to meet up today at the Zeitgeist, which is this kind of a biker hangout in San Francisco with a lot of history. And so he bought me a couple of beers, which made my bicycle ride home interesting. But it was great meeting you, Edward.
Cool. And I wish I could have been there.
Yeah, he was asking, like, why is Jim not here? I'm like, you realize that, like, yeah, we're in Northern California, but he's like 4 hours away.
Well, I appreciate the thought. You know, I don't know. The Zeitgeist is more of a bicycle bar as opposed to a bike.
These days it is. but it still has a lot of that same.
Well, there's no ambience. Doubt. There's no doubt when you say there's a lot of history, man. I've got a lot of history in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We need to talk about some racing, dude.
Right. Yeah, we covered all the MotoGP. I guess just a reminder that Martin's there. So make sure you, if you are going to be going to Silverstone, write a meetup at motopodcast.com, and he will get back with you with a meetup location. All right, so we had Superbikes at Misano Circuit Marco Simoncelli. It was the first weekend that it ran that name. And I could say, at least for race one, that it lived up to the great Simoncelli name. You know, it was worthy. It was very, very, very worthy. We had an unsurprising Tom Sykes on pole with Johnny Ray, and very surprising Baldovini, who was the whole weekend was on fire. Davide Giuliano, Smertz, Haslam, Laverty, and Guintoli. Those are the guys who were on the first two rows. Notice I did not mention either Biaggi or Checa because they weren't there.
Right. I still think that Giuliani for me is the what of this year?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wasn't sure what you meant by that, but yes. I mean, he is, he is definitely, he's like what Badavini was like last year, except on a better machinery.
True. Well, I mean, yeah, the Altea squad's definitely got their stuff together, which will be interesting next year when factory comes back to see who they bring in. I'm sorry. Carry on.
No, so because Biaggi and Checa, where Biaggi was in row three in 10th position and Checa was in 16th place in the fourth row. So he just barely made it into the Super Pole One. And, you know, we don't have BSB rules in Superbikes, which means that they were both quite hobbled right from the get-go in both races.
Right.
But...
You should explain... Yeah, so, why don't we explain that statement? So in BSB rules... when you... wherever your finishing position is, or your fast lap, I guess it's your fast lap, right? Mm-hmm. In race one, or the prior race, because some BSB weekends have three races, including the one coming up soon, that's where you line up for the grid for your next race, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. I love that rule.
Yeah. Carry on.
Right. So, but despite the fact that Sykes was on pole and usually he gets a couple of laps to lead it, it was Ray that got the whole shot and he took off. And it was really behind him. It looked like he was going to just go away and run away with it because by lap five or six, he had a good 2 second lead on Sykes. And then Sykes started getting passed and they started shuffling around with him and Haslam. And then amazingly, Biaggi, I think he was seventh at the end of the first lap. So he made up a couple of spots. And Checa was working his way kind of ruthlessly, actually. It was good to see Checa, who's, you know, it's good to see him when he's very smooth because he's been fantastic that way. But he also was just like he really wanted to be up front in this race.
Mm-hmm.
Last year he took two wins. So obviously the Ducati and his squad and he are very, very happy this track. So this is the track that I love. I loved Martin's description of those three corners where it's like, you know, if you got balls. No, I mean, have you got balls? No, I mean, really, you mean it? Do you have balls? You know, because of that, of those right-handers that you're progressively going crazier and crazier into those right-handers in the, on that back section. Anyway, but Checa's super smooth through there, but he was putting some hard moves on, and then Ray, who it really looked like he was just going to have a total runaway race. Just started slow down. I mean, he started losing about a second per lap to the guys who were chasing him. And so within a few laps, they caught him and passed him. And it was him and Sykes were fighting for probably the last six or seven laps alone. And he sort of got his pace back to be able to hold him off. But yeah, it was very painful to see.
I never did hear what the reason for that was it tires? What went off?
That's true. No, they didn't say, but it had to. I mean, it had to be tires.
Okay,
it had to be tires. But it was really the podium fight that was amazing because we had Biaggi and Checa and Giuliano in the front, and Giuliano was actually leading the race for a couple laps, and those guys fought to the very end. I mean, to the very freaking end. And people ran wide, not just Biaggi. and Checa went off track once and still managed to get pulled into second place. And it was, you know, beautiful race. Very exciting. Edge of the seat. You know, Sexton Ray also had a great fight. Davies was up there. Lavity was the seventh. Quintoli was eighth. And so on down the line. We did lose Melandri, and I don't remember exactly how it happened.
I think you were a little bit stunned by what was going on up front.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if he had a mechanical retirement or did he crash?
Yeah, three laps before the end, right?
Yeah, I believe something went wrong with his bike, or maybe he crashed and then had a mechanical because after trying to get back on track. But anyway. Fantastic race. If your DVR still has it, definitely recommend watching it.
Or watch it again.
Yeah.
I caught little bits and pieces and I need to go back and watch the whole thing. I kind of feel bad when I come on the show and I haven't watched everything.
Yeah. Yep. I know that feeling. Race two was kind of boring actually. Although the fact that Biaggi and Checa once again stormed through the field was just mind-blowing, the old guys, you know. And they were putting some hard moves, man. Giuliano got a little ahead of himself, crashed this time. Guintoli had a crash, kind of nasty looking one,
yeah.
But he was okay. And then Checa crashed. So once again, you know, we have to start to wonder, like, you know, how the hell is Checa going to wind back this championship, figure shit out, because he's, I think that he makes it look like he's in control and smooth, but I think he's riding very much on the edge to get the results that he gets.
Really?
And I mean, obviously they all do. Don't go. Oh, duh. But
I can't go duh.
No. Well, you can if you want. Duh. But I think that, because no, it's been surprising. It's been surprising to see him crash the way he's crashed out. This was kind of a stupid crash too. And now he's in really bad position because Biaggi won again, and Biaggi just took off, and he was controlling the race up front. He won by only 5 seconds, but he was really capable of winning by 10 because he was leading by 7 when he kind of started rolling off.
You know, something interesting about Biaggi is he mm-hmm. seems to ride best when he feels like he has a nemesis, very old school Fogarty-ish. I wonder if he's like getting in Carlos's head.
Maybe.
Just wonder.
Maybe.
Ponder that, folks.
Jonathan Rea this time did not. They went through and they changed a bunch of stuff on the bike. He said in the after the interview. Obviously, the first race they were super disappointed, so they went and changed some settings, probably hardened up the suspension a little bit, and him and Haslam fought. That was really the fight of this race because Biaggi, once he went past him, he was gone. So it was Rea and Haslam just fighting to the end, and it actually looked like Haslam may have he could have stolen the second place from Rea in the last corner, but Rea is really, you know, he's always been really good at getting on the power early. He's like the Danny Pedrosa of World Superbikes.
Mm-hmm.
This time Melandri did not have he had a much better race. It was Melandri and Badovini that had a crash coming together in the first race.
Right.
Badovini survived it, but Melandri did not. Anyway, so Melandri and Badovini fought again. We had Fabrizio up there, Sykes seventh. So Sykes, you know, he's consistently finishing races, but he just that bike just does not want to keep up because he was leading this race for about 3 or 4 laps, and again, it's like he shoots. He gets away. He puts a little bit of a gap, even, and then they just reel him in.
Yep.
And you know, it's not him physically having issues. It's the bike, the tires. It's eating up the tires, which has always been the problem with the Cowies.
But it's interesting, Jules. When we've seen him on the box this year, and they show the rear, it's not that bad.
I know. Isn't that weird?
So either they're. And so what that makes me think is that this is the first year that the ZX-10 actually has the gumption, or at least at some tracks, to run at the front relatively consistently, and it hasn't been that way in the past, which means they don't have data to rely on like every other team does. Popped into my head the other day. Maybe that's a reason why they can't keep Tom at the front. You know, he can run a great lap in Super Pole, and he can be very quick for the, you know, first two thirds of the race, but then the bike falls off. It's not fitness. Yeah. Tom's a very fit guy. Totally. And it's not racecraft, because he's certainly got that. It just makes me wonder what it is going. And, you know, there's other things that go on too. I mean, you can end up with an overheated shock. There's a whole bunch of little things that can go on. And so when I see Tom get on the podium and the tires look in good shape, the first thing that you want to think of is, okay, they had the bike sorted for that race. Well, sorted could mean more than just the electronics to take care of the tires. It could be suspension setup. It could be a whole myriad of things. And I want to know. And Tom won't give shit up. He won't say anything.
He'll just smile.
Yeah, he'll just smile and say, yeah. it's kind of a mystery when he, you know, because you see him qualify so well. What was that? The fifth pole of six races?
Seven races, six poles.
Yeah. I mean, incredible.
Crazy.
I'm trying to think. Do you get points for pole in World Superbike? No, you don't.
No, we just get him in the fantasy league. That's why you're thinking of that.
Well, it's not unusual in some series to get a point for pole. Anyway, yeah, some absolutely great white racing this weekend.
I would say that the first race was one of the best superbike races I've ever seen, and we've had a bunch this year already because the Dunnington races were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It really was a great race, and we're seeing the best season ever. You realize? Because MotoGP racing has been fantastic. Well, Superbike racing is fantastic. The only series that actually isn't as exciting as it should be is Supersport, which we'll get to in a sec. So Biaggi's now on the top of the table with 210.5 points. And Ray is second, 38.5 points behind at 172. Kamen, Sykes, Melandri, and Cheka are all within about 30 points of each other. But now Cheka's 60 points behind Biaggi. That's massive.
Yes, it is.
Now it's massive because we've only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rounds left.
Well, that's
14 races. It's a lot of points, but somebody would have to, you know, Biaggi's been first, second, fourth, eighth, okay. Fifth, second, third, first. I mean, you know, you can't imagine if this continues, there's just no way that Cheka can catch him.
Okay,
he can win the rest of the season. And, you know.
If you went back and look at last year's stats, I believe he tailed off as the season progressed. So,
yeah, but probably that was part of it was also just that he was so in the lead, you know.
True. Well,
it's you could read it many different ways. That's true.
True.
Right. So, Supersport was a boring race. Actually, it was Sefolaglu and Cluzel in front. Everybody else was fairly far behind. Sam Lowes unfortunately fell. While Cluzel was threatening, he never actually was able to put a move on the Sefolaglu. Sefolaglu really is good at running up front, isn't he? That guy.
Yeah.
He's always really enjoyed and done well running up front. Because I know some racers would prefer to let, you know, Marquez is famous for waving guys by. You know, Tirol was doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not Sefolaglu. He likes to be up there. But what I did want to talk about one thing, which is this ridiculous freaking penalty that was given to Foray. What happened was he ran wide on the first lap. I'm going to say the left, right, left. So it's probably turn three, I think. And I guess re-entered two spots ahead of where he went off, right? So about 5 or 6 laps into the race, race direction wants him to go back two places because that's what he gained when he went off the track and then re-entered the track in the wrong position.
Right.
But the board they put up was his number and +2. You know, the yellow board with the black lettering.
Right.
It's obviously the race direction board. And he just was writing by like, huh? You know?
Right.
What the hell does that mean? And instead of trying to clarify, like, could you please put, you know, like P2, you know, -P2, do something where the position, the you know, they're used to seeing a P when the boards are talking about position. This +2 is usually like seconds. Like, what, am I supposed to fall back 2 seconds? Meanwhile, the guys, so he was chasing Cluzel and Sefolaglu and was way ahead of the next two guys. And finally, decided, okay, I'm going to slow down. He let, I believe it was, at the time it was still Sam Lowes, pass him. And, but not, he didn't let the guy behind him again pass him. So then he got a ride through penalty, which you could tell he was just really, just like, what is going on? Because he rode by, he saw the board that said ride through, and he was just waving to his crew frantically, like, can somebody please explain to me what the fuck is going on? You know?
Well, this is the ferret.
Yeah, I know, but you know what? it was, yeah, I know. he is a feisty one. But, you know, I think a lot of riders would have said, you know, screw sure. this. I'm just going to race. Black flag me. I don't freaking care anymore. He did go the right through, and he ended up in eighth anyway. So,
yeah.
So I think he rode with a lot of anger.
Well, that also kind of, when you can pull that off, it also shows that to some extent, it was a rather dull race.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, and I mean, he did gain two spots, I believe, because there were two riders that crashed in front of him.
Right.
But I just thought that was just ugly race direction. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
Well,
a plus two.
My guess is, and the riders mean that had been discussed before, because these things aren't they don't make them up on the fly.
Yeah, but it's probably, you know, it's discussed and never happens. So you, I mean,
right. Well, okay. So let me play devil's advocate.
Well, okay. So first of all, the rule actually is, if you enter the track ahead of the position that you were in, right, you're supposed to go back to the position that you were at.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right. So just to clarify that this is, they didn't come up with a rule and then try to explain it with a plus two.
Okay. So my point being is that what I would have expected at that point, if the team, and it was pretty clear from my understanding that Fabian was confused by what race direction was showing him, would have thrown out a board that clarified it.
Yeah. Like, freaking, you know, take a Sharpie, right? Yeah. Right. Go back two spots.
Yeah.
You know?
In French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't have
to play.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's the verbiage that you use to get Fabian to do something. Anyway, a good weekend of racing from Misano. You know, it's funny. About a month and a half ago, during I think it was a snowstorm here, I watched an old GP from there back when they went in the other direction.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it was kind of cool. It was a little haunting in a way, and part of that was because of the folks that I'd seen at Miller, because we had one Wayne Rainey there. So, anyway, oof.
Right. So I just. Super Sport standings now. Cefalaglu leads Clouzel, 22 points ahead, which, just a reminder, is much more meaningful in Super Sports because they only race once per weekend. And Lowe's still third, but Foray fourth, Baldellini fifth, and Parks, who actually looked really good because he was on the front row, got bumped in the beginning of the race, and yeah, she actually finished fifth, which that's right. That's right. He had a rotten race and he made the best of it, actually, because he was, I think, like 10th at one point. Anyway, so that's my horrible recollection of those races. All I know is Super Sport, Super Bike Race 1 was great.
I'm chuckling because this may be one of, you know me, for the last, I don't know, N number of years, I've been like religiously watching Super Sport, and I think this may be one of the first weekends that I have not caught the Super Sport race yet.
You didn't miss that much.
You know what? I'm still going to watch it just to have some continuity so that I can go, okay, well, he sucked last week and he's not sucking this week. All right. What else do we have going on? Well, obviously, over the last fortnight, we've had the Isle of Man TT going on. And once again, I've been trying to keep up with that as well as I can. And I've been doing it mostly, even though I've watched a bunch of the races,
radio,
through talking with the group of people I have or had and have over on the island. And I've got a pretty good network of people over there. A gentleman that put me up last year, Dan Lowe, as you know, Mark and Vero, several other racers, and that's kind of been my lifeline to actually keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on. It was an interesting 2 weeks, Jules. Practice week, for the most part, with a couple of exceptions, was not so bad weather-wise. And when it comes to the aisle, weather is always a factor, and it certainly was during this year's TT. I have to say that there was a huge part of me when I was watching everything happen this year. I'm like,
yeah, I can imagine, dude. I can totally imagine.
Oh, especially when, you know, I see all the photos of my friends having fun. I'm like, fuck. But that being said, there was a good reason for me to stay here, which was so that I can get some money together so I can get my ass over there next year and get me into several other races this year. I might be able to actually pay to go to Moscow myself. Ooh, that'd be kind of neat. I still have, I'm harboring hankering to get over to Moscow just for the uniqueness of it. You know what I mean? That was a World Superbike restaurant. Thank you. And so we walked into basically, and the one thing, Jules, and I'll point it out now because then you pointed it out, we did manage to get through the entire fortnight and all the races we had, even with some dodgy weather on race week. We didn't have any fatalities this year. Now, when you and I talk about short circuit racing, it isn't something we bring up usually, right?
Yeah.
It is something that you kind of watch the TT with some trepidation, not only, you know, the participants, but sometimes the marshals and whoever happens to get in the way. And there were certainly some crashes this year. I think Simon Andrews probably had the most spectacular one. I think he went about 142 miles in a wall. I saw
and walked away.
Yeah, and walked away. Well,
on his own power. Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. I saw amazing. A photo of him after that. And he ruptured his eyeballs.
Oh, dude. Seriously?
Yeah. And
that's messed up.
And he looked like
he's like a pilot that goes through negative G's.
He looked like a zombie. His eyes were like, you know, when you take a photo with bad flash, you know, you get the red eye.
Oh, fuck.
He had it naturally. And I'm like, oh, that creeped me out. Anyway, Simon, I'm glad that you're feeling much better. He's been, and I found out there's a hyperbaric chamber on the aisle. And he's been spending a bunch of time down there. He's got one of those little carts that you see going around your local Safeway or Tesco's, if you're over in the UK, to get down there. And he seems to be handling well, and he's actually talking about being back out again soon. He's on the Honda TT Legends squad, as well as, I guess, doing the World Endurance Cup, or you maybe just be doing BSB. Good to see him back up and running. Had a couple of our American friends take a spill over the weekend. Chris Habora and Brendan Cretu both had offs during the week. Mr. Mark Miller had a pretty good week. He was fighting his Aprilia, and I'm just saying this because I'm an American, so I've got my own biases. had a pretty good week. Spent a lot of time with his lead wrench, Mr. Dave Hopkinson, trying to tame the split Redmond split left Aprilia. And get that thing handling better. I know that they swapped out the entire front end post Superbike in preparation for Super Stock. And they went to another brand, a Bold Maneuver. I've been chatting back and forth with Mark in email constantly. It's been fun. And let me just run through some of these results here, and I'll kind of give you an idea of what happened with the weather as the week went on. Basically, your race week starts on Sunday. So you've got a whole week of practice. You run through that, dealing with the weather. And here's those of you that haven't been to the TT, this is something I should fill you in on because it is something that's quite unusual. If you've been to a short circuit race, you're used to and you've been tight in there. And if you're a real hardcore fan, you may end up early there, 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. That doesn't happen at the TT. Their latitudes are a bit higher than what we've got here in North America. It being an island, it doesn't get dark there this time of year until 9:30, 10:30 at night, something like that. The photo that I have from the first night I was there last year was taken at 10:30, and we still had a relatively bluish sky behind the Opera House and the Promenade. And so the way that it works, and this is a island with public roadways, is they shut the roads down, at least during practice week, at 5:30, 6 in the evening. And you think about that, and you're like, what? Mm-hmm. No, seriously. And Jules, imagine that, you know, here in the States.
Anywhere, the States, forget it.
But Delight then is great. It's fantastic. And in a way, what it's allowed the roads to do if it rained the night before is give them a chance to dry out. And in the same vein, what they're trying to do is not overly inconvenience the populace, because the last thing you want to do is get everybody pissed off because there's a race going on. For the most part, the people who live there really, really dig it. The majority do. There's a vocal minority that aren't too pleased about it. So what they'll do is they'll practice from 5:30 to, say, 8:30 at the latest, about like that. So 3.5 hours of practice. That might be stretching a little bit. I'm not sure of those numbers exactly off the top of my head. But that's the schedule for the whole first week. It's not until the second week, race week, they start closing the roads off earlier. And that's when the majority of the spectators come out. That's when TV really kicks in. Gentlemen that I stayed with last year, you guys might remember I talked to Frank Shungel, moonlights during TT week for ITV4. And those are the folks that bring us those absolutely fantastic slow motion shots. You know, the bike's bottoming out through a couple of the corners, coming up over Igo's Leap, just amazing stuff.
Flying.
Yeah, literally flying. Oh man, there was some great jumps this year. The man of the week, of course, we'll talk about this in a bit, that being Johnny Mack, or Johnny McPint. I think that's the best nickname ever. Had some great, great shots. All right, so because I am a sidecar fan, and I have been since back in the days when they ran with GP500, as well as sometimes in conjunction with World Superbike, I want to run through these because the name is legend. Dave Molyneux, back after a year's absence with his partner, Patrick France. This is a sidecar race one. I'm going to jump into results here so you guys keep up with me. Your podium was Dave Molyneux and Patrick France, Ben Birchall and Tom Birchall, pair of brothers, Conrad Harrison and Mike Aylott. That was the first race on Saturday. Following up with that was our first bike race, and that would have been the Danny's Superbike race. This one was a bit interesting, and it didn't become so until later in the week, because there are two Superbike races during the TT. There is the Superbike Danny's Superbike race on the Saturday. So this is the first day of racing for the TT week, following the TT practice week. Are you keeping up with this, Jules?
I am, totally.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much.
Should I do it all? This is the first race for the Thaws, or the big bikes. There's plenty of ducks out there as well. And just to run through, I'm going to jam through the top 10 and I'll kind of give my highlights. Our winners were John McGinnis, Cam McDonald, Bruce Anstey on the box, Guy Martin, Gary Johnston, William Dunlop, James Hillier, who had a great week. Ian Hutchinson, Dean Harrison, Michael Dunlop, and in your 11th spot was Dan Neen, who also had a great week considering. That was Johnny Mack's first start. And he looked to be dominating all through the practice week. And I was suitably impressed. He had a great TT last year. And I'm like, all right, this may be the weekend he pulls off a Hutchie. And that being 5 wins in a race week. Interestingly enough, watching the highlights and the races themselves, it was pretty clear that Ian Hutchinson is still hurting. Which is totally understandable. I mean, this time last year, he had a halo around his leg. He also had re-injured that leg. And crazily enough, is back out here running now. So the tip of the Motopod hat to you, Hutchie. Very, very impressive. And I don't know. I'm a big pussy. I wouldn't even try. Well, not to mention it's at the aisle. But, you know, there's a lot of these guys, Jules. You know, I like to say that Sears is my home circuit. Some of these guys, you know, the aisle is their home circuit, especially somebody like, Cameron Donald or Connor Cummins, those kind of guys. It's just amazing. All right, so we had a bit of a break. Then we managed to get in Super Sport Race 1, and that one, if I remember correctly, was a bit delayed. We had a little bit of weather come through. I'm going to run through your top 10 here too, because it kind of, we've got a little bit of carbon copy work going on, but of course the 600 specialists came to the fore. Bruce Anstey, Cameron McDonald, of course, William Dunlop, who this year, Jules, was riding, interestingly enough, was riding smoother than ever. And in the past few years, he's had a very aggressive but smooth style. But I mean, like, occasionally.
This is the nephew of Joe.
Yeah.
Joey, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
He's as Mark would say, is a bit of a fat cunt. He's a big nice lad. John McGinnis, right up there in fourth. James Hillier, Ian Laffer, Roy Richardson, Dan Stewart, Ian Hutchinson, and Ivan Linton, who's somebody I really wasn't familiar with. Dan Cooper in 11th. So, moving on.
And Mark Miller finished?
Mark Miller was in, he didn't run Supersport.
Oh.
Yep.
That's right. He
was talking about getting a Supersport ride. I don't think that ever happened. If it did.
He was talking about getting a Triumph, right?
I believe you said that. You know what? And frankly, Mark, if I forgot that, then you can kick me in the balls next time you see me.
Ooh, can we line up?
You just might want to get your macro. Did I say that?
Oh, Jim.
moving on, Superstock TT the same day. I believe that would have been Monday, and then our next race day was Wednesday. Yeah, I'm just trying to keep up here with myself. Monday, Superstock TT, we had your top 10 would have been John McGinnis, Michael Dunlop. Ryan
Farquhar. There's so many of these Dunlops.
Yeah, I know. Ryan Farquhar, who had a great week. Bruce Anstey, Guy Martin, James Hillier, Michael Putter, Gary Johnson, Dan Stewart, and Cam McDonald, with Ian Hutchinson in 11th spot. Mark Miller was in that race. They ended up deciding to run, their plan was to in the senior, because they actually liked the super stock bike better, to run the super stock bike in the senior, which I thought was interesting. And it just seemed to have a better setup. And then I don't think they had all the kit to outfit both of the bikes. So they were concentrating on the super stock bike. Mark came in 31st in the super stock race and seemed pretty pleased with that result. No huge issues. He did say the bike was moving around a lot, but that's what the Aprilia does. Unless you've got cubic dollars to throw at it. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, so Tuesday, it was pissing down rain all day and everybody was like, oh shit. All right. So what's going on? Wednesday dawned the same and they were trying to figure out exactly what they were going to do. Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, that the races start later in the day, so they can kind of sit there and wait a while. You can only wait so long, Jules. And that really played into what happened at this.
Well, actually, I remember.
Yeah.
Was it 2 years ago when Discovery was showing the highlights here in the States? Do you remember that? And what was crazy was I remember one race starting where the shadows were really long, and I was like, are they seriously going to start this race? I mean, it'll be dark by the time they're done. And yeah, but the shadows were just, I mean, they were long, but they stayed like that for a long time.
Absolutely. Well, and especially, you know, when you get up on the mountain, you're either in full shadow or in, you know, enough sun. Some of the mountain shots when you get into late races are really cool because the shadows extend so far down the road or up against the hillside. It's like, whoa, did I actually just see that?
Right.
anyway, so Tuesday weather was crap. Wednesday dawned crap. And we weren't even sure that come Wednesday we were going to have any racing. I believe there were 9 or 10 teams that actually started. So we ended up running the TT0 first. And I'm pretty sure that set off around, I don't even want to say because I'll probably be wrong, but that was the first race up, the electric bike race. And we knew that we were going to have a bit of a battle here. It was clear that John McGinnis had come to terms with the new kid on the block, that being the Mugen Shinden bike, which is a bit of a Honda collaborative project. You remember last year, the sort of infamous thing that he said to me, which we threw into the show, which was, I want one. I'm like, really? Is it novelty? I want one. and come to be that he did get one. We had both Michael Rutter there and Mark Miller on the Ciz bikes, and those bikes were, you and I have already discussed this, you were not very enchanted by their looks.
I'm sure they looked great at speed.
Well, doesn't everything. But there was no doubt that we had a battle on our hands. And it was pretty impressive how quickly McGinnis came up to quote-unquote speed on the electronics, because that's absolutely key on these bikes. You have to not only maintain your speed, maintain your corner speed, but also keep a good eye on what your capacity is. It's like, picture this, Jules. If you were racing and you knew you had n number of liters of fuel in your tank, and your job was to a huge part of your and you were limited on how much fuel you had. This might be an interesting little race to have.
Mm-hmm. A train leaves Chicago at 8 p.m.
and there's a swallow flying in the other direction. You're constantly having to pay attention to what is quote unquote in the tank. What they've been trying to do this year, and certainly with the Ciz team, and I'm assuming with the Mugen team as well, is trying to remove some of that input from the riders to let them ride. Right. And so in a way to dumb things down a bit, you know, green for go, yellow, for
right,
slow,
right,
yellow
right.
for slow.
Like those little arrows that a lot of riders will have, like,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Throttle on.
Yeah.
Break.
and in a way, in the end, it turned out that we ended up with, so the running order was basically Rutter setting off first, having been winner from last year. Miller setting off second. So these are approximately 10-second intervals, and McGinnis coming off third. From what I saw of the highlights, and I'm looking forward to seeing the full race, it looked like it was a pretty good race. I think Mark hit 132 on Solby straight, which isn't that impressive considering, I think, the day before he hit 156 or something. One of them did. But that's a clear evidence of these guys actually conserving for the run up the mountain, because that's when you need the most torque and the most draw from them. So, in the end...
Mark had issues with the bike.
Well, he did during practice. His dash took a shit.
Oh, it was just during practice. I thought it was during race too. Okay.
No. It's funny, when I was talking to him in email today, he's like, "Oh yeah, I'm ready to talk." So we just need to hook up. Rob Auber in fourth. They only show four finishers, but the key thing to this race, or at
dude,
least,
that's the only people that finished.
Well, I think that's the only people that finished within a certain time frame. I think there were actually a couple of bikes that still made it across.
No, dude, really? They didn't. Okay. They did not make it around the track.
Well, then that's a little sad. But the thing that was cool with this was the top three bikes, and something that's been vied for the past few years, was breaking the 10. And Michael Rutter did that with a top speed of 104.056. A lot of people go, "Well, pish." I'd like to remind all of you that
that's the average speed.
That's an average speed. And on top of that, for the gasoline powered bikes, it took them 54 years to achieve that.
I love that. I love that statistic. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Now, granted, the rolling bits that are
a little better.
Similar, yeah. They're all better. But yeah, it's still incredibly impressive.
And watching those bikes get off the line, I'm like, and I remember last year, both Whittem and I kind of looked at each other after, I think it was when Rutter went off the line. We looked at each other like, holy shit. well, there's no doubt that they were getting off the line even quicker this year. And part of that is key, because you have to remember that when you're doing a one lap race, which a lot of people also go pish about, from a standing start, you got to get going. You can't get up to speed slowly. So they expend an awful lot of energy in that first little burst, and they have to.
That's true. That's true.
They have to. And so if you look at it, so, you know, the top lap speeds that you get for, the guys that are running in the TT in multi-lap races, those are flying runs. You know, those are the laps that they've got a, you know, partial tank of gas. They come flying down Glen Crutchery Road at 170 miles an hour, and they averaged 131, as John McGinnis did last year. Speeds were a little bit slower this year.
I just want to point out how freaking insane that is. I mean,
yes, it is.
It's rare that I've been on a motorcycle and I've actually hit, you know, I mean, I think the top I've ever gone was like 165, and it was brief and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even on the racetracks around here that have long straights, like Thunderhill, you know, I hit 140, 145 on my 916, mm-hmm. and then I have to hit the brakes. I have no freaking idea how you do that. And average, when they go through this, you know, 20, 30 mile an hour hairpins at some points of that track, you know, towns with curbing, with trees, it's freaking insane.
Or over little ridges, you go over 30 miles an hour and still get a foot and a half air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Well, you've got places like, you know, coming down to Cragney Bar or down Silby Strait where you're just cooking.
Yeah. And the mountain part, obviously, they're making up that for that average. But still, it's mind blowing. It is mind blowing. Whenever I see those numbers and think, oh, yeah, that's just the average speed.
Before you, before you die, you and I are going to go over there.
All right.
Yeah, I grovel. It'll be fun, trust me. All right, so on top of that, Michael Rutter, congratulations. Both John McGinnis and Mark Miller broke the 10 as well, but Michael was the first to do it and the fastest to do it. So 104.056. I think John clocked in at 102 something and Mark at 101. So it's cool to see all three bikes on the box break the 10. Where do we go from here? It'll be interesting because there are, you know, I kind of wonder, Jules, the pace of stuff on this is accelerating right now. I hate it when I say stuff like that because it sounds like I'm trying to be punny and I'm not. who knows what's going to happen in a year's time with batteries and whatnot. Lightning was so there.
Yeah. What I think is going to actually happen is we're going to see the performance start to take like a logarithmic curve down. I mean, you know, so yeah. We're not going to see those leaps and bounds, but we're going to see much better reliability and more guys on the grid. And that's what's going to make it super exciting, because even if those guys will never reach, you know, well not never, but because in racing, there is such thing as never, but let's say it takes, you know, another 10 years before they hit what the ice bikes are doing right now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, because once we have a grid where there's competition of, you know, 6, 7, 8, maybe even 10 bikes that actually can compete, it's going to be amazing. Yep. It's going to be amazing. And
you know,
then we're going to start seeing those things at circuit, short circuit racing as well. So,
true. Well, it will be interesting to see, and I think this will be kind of a pivotal year, how quickly because obviously one of the big things that's holding the bikes back is weight, and mm-hmm. how quickly the battery manufacturers can innovate and come up with new things. One of the teams that was out there was Lightning this year, and they made a decision to, which is probably not the best one, right? My personal opinion, to go with a untested battery that they partnered with a German firm with. And so they showed up at the aisle and they put together a battery pack and they ran into issues and they didn't run.
Right.
And they
had such a great kind of lead up to that, because they looked very, very solid at the rounds that they ran at in the US.
Exactly. What that tells me is that people are changing things pretty quickly, and the pace of innovation and change is probably a lot different than what we're seeing in the internal combustion world. And so you never know if somebody's going to, oh God, I was going to use the term flip a switch. Kill me now. I'm not meaning to do this, but if there's not going to be some little tipping point where ding, somebody finds that magic bullet, and God, I'm really being careful what I say. And all of a sudden we find a bike or team that leapfrogs the rest or comes out of nowhere. And what will that do, Jules? Well, it'll push everybody else to do the same thing. So it's a fun area to watch from a what's coming next standpoint. I think this year was kind of the, and it could have been the case for Lightning if they got the bike in the race, but I think this year was an interesting experiment in aerodynamics. Anyway, I'm going on and on and on about the TT0 in which four guys finished in. So good job to Michael Rutter. Congratulations on the 10,000 euros, pounds, I'm sure, probably aisle pounds. You looked happy with that check, and you probably, oh, you got that sweet watch, you bastard. John McGinnis and Mark Miller, there is a cool trio to have on the podium. And they did have a talk before the race because conditions were semi-dodgy. Moving on, SureTrack Sidecar TT Race 2. Just run through these real quick. Your podium was Dave Molyneux, once again. Patrick France. Yes, sir?
I was just going to say that that guy is like the Epic. Valentino Rossi of...
Yeah.
Of sidecars.
Well, he's a Valentino Rossi mixed in with an Ago because he's like, I ain't quitting. Tim Reeves and Dan Sale and Ben Birchall and Tom Birchall. And that was, I believe, post TT0. And we also did have a Super Sport race that day, the Super Sport Race 2. Michael Dunlop to the fore. Cam Donald, Ryan Farquhar was your podium. Bruce Anstey, John McGinnis, still right up there. One of the best races of the week for Ian Hutchinson, James Hillier, Guy Martin. Guy didn't figure much this year. And after all the shit he was giving Hutchie back and forth on Twitter, I was like, dude. Dan Stewart and Daniel Cooper. Ian Laufer was down there, a bunch of other gentlemen as we work our way through. Coming around to, so we had another couple of days of rain, or a couple of days off, and coming around to Saturday. Saturday is the final day of the TT weekend. And truth be told, Sunday is the final day of the TT fortnight, because that's when everybody wakes up in the morning and goes, oh, fuck, what did I do last night? Donned bitterly cold, bitterish cold and shit weather. And it was bucketing down in... Things weren't looking good. Now, in the same vein, I think the original scheduled off, the original schedule, if I remember correctly, and this is not the way it ended up, was 10:35 for a warm-up for the lightweights. Now, the lightweight class this year is a new one, which I really appreciate because, for me, I miss the two strokes. I miss the smaller bikes at the aisle, and I think the 650 twins that we have out these days are very interesting race bikes. You can put them together. The bits and bobs are not that expensive, and you can actually put yourself a decent race bike. Here in the States, Jules, the one that is wildly popular is Suzuki SV650.
Yep.
In the TT, the one that is wildly popular is the 650 Kawi. I think they call it an ER6 or an ER6N over there. And that was the bike to have. Yeah, it's an interesting little dichotomy. Now, I don't know if that has to do with if the rules work better for the Kawi. Maybe I'll look into that later, maybe for the next show. Or I'll ask Mark. I'll ask Mark to research that for me. This was a pretty damn good race. There was a bit of back and forth. I believe this was a 3-lap race. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I have not seen it yet. I have not seen the highlights, but I was watching it on timing and scoring. In the battle really was, and it was kind of sorted out before the end of the second lap. Your top three were Ryan Farquhar, James Hillier, and Michael Rutter. And good on Michael for coming back and getting on the box again. Working your way down, Cam Donald, Russ Mountford, William Dunlop, Ivan Linton, Ian Laufer, Ollie Linzel. Good for you, Ollie. And Jamie Hamilton. And the reason that race ran first, and I guess I should clarify all this. So talking about the results of a race, because this isn't what we expected. The first race that was supposed to be going off, I think, here's where my memory fails me again, probably, that the senior was supposed to go off. What is a senior? Senior is the second superbike race of the fortnight. And it is, well, Jules, it's the race.
The one. It's the race.
Yeah. There are teams that come out and they spend the entire 2 weeks really everything they do and the races they run prior to this is in preparation for the senior.
Yeah.
And the senior has, well, it's, I believe this may be the first time, and I could be wrong, somebody will correct me. I believe this is the first time it's ever actually been canceled. And the reason being was that there was just a bit too many damp spots around the circuit. And so they ended up sending out the lightweights instead, the 650 twins. So these are guys with at best 100 horsepower, which is pushing it. Maybe somebody out there with like in the mid 90s, as opposed to 200 plus horsepower superbikes. And so it was a matter of safety. And frankly, the riders agreed on it. Much to their credit, the TT folks offered a refund to everybody that had a grandstand ticket for Saturday. And I thought that was very cool, even though they got to sit around and watch the lightweight race. So very cool to have the lightweight twins out there. I'm pumped, as I said, I'm pumped to see a new class because we were losing classes left and right. I remember the 125s, the 400s, those things to me were near and dear. Going further back, the 250s, 250 production, 250, you know, we had GP bikes out there, Jules, back in the day. We literally had GPs here. So to me, it's a very storied racetrack. What do we look at for the end of the weekend? Because they always have the Joey Dunlop TT Championship Trophy. It includes the Superbike and Supersport races, including Superstock and the Senior. No surprise here, John McGinnis took it this year, 7 points over Bruce Anstey, and as I said, had a great week. Michael Dunlop and James Hillier were your top five. Interestingly enough, Cam Donald, had he not had a bit of bad luck in the Superstock race, would have easily taken the week's trophy because he had 3 second places in the sixth spot. So, Duke can ride.
That's a ninth spot.
Yeah. 6 points. Yep. 6 points.
Yep.
So it was a fantastic 2 weeks. I hated every one of my friends that were out there. Everybody was posting pictures right, left, and center. And I'm like, and then saying, wish you were here. And I'm like, at some point, I felt like going, fuck you, I'm not. it was fun to watch. And I've still got some catching up to do, which I'm really looking forward to. And I'm looking forward to seeing it on the big screen when it makes it this way. I'm just watching on the little screen right now. That is your World Superbike and TT Roundup. Holy crap.
Yeah, it was tough.
Is it Thursday yet, Jules? It might be by the time this gets out. what else is going on? This thing was funny. Talk about this. I was laughing too.
Oh, dude. So Jib just posted this YouTube link to me and just says, you got to watch this. And I was like, okay. And I had a tough time watching it just because it's from about
93.
It was 20 years ago.
20 years
almost.
Ago.
Almost 20 years ago, and it has Julian Ryder. And that Julian Ryder looked very different back then. Well, no, he looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
Except 20 years younger.
20 years younger. You know? He sounded the same.
He sounded exactly the same. He had the same mannerisms. He wore the same shirt, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's actually from there was a debacle that I forgot, as I was watching it, I was like, oh yeah, I totally now remember this craziness where when the Superbikes went to Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't a very well organized race, let's just put it that way. But anyway, we're going to put the video link in the show notes because it is such an insane thing, crazy thing to watch. Not just because of seeing Julian Ryder, you know, seeing all those guys, you know, Foggy, Whittem is in there, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Scott Russell. And a dog and a truck driving across the track in the middle of practice. Anyway, very much worth watching. Hilarious, crazy. Actually, you know, it's hilarious, but also you're sitting there going, I'm just so glad nobody got hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know, it was insane how easily that could have happened. Yeah. So, yeah. And then, you know, again, Silverstone this week. I don't have any energy to make predictions, but it should be a good race.
Well, okay, and let me point out right now that we're going to have classic UK weather, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The sun is out right now, which means it's probably going to rain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Martin's going to be there covering the event for us. I can't wait to see what he's got when he comes back. And then we're off. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Wah, wah, wah. Leave that in, Jules.
Everybody, should we try that again?
No. I think that was perfect. Everybody, right. Thanks for listening to the show. If you'd like to give us a hand, you can always send a donation in through the motorpodcast.com fan page or the Facebook page. You can come and chat with us or at least read what we're talking about. And that's not just us. It's the other Jules, near 15,000 people now.
Yeah.
On the Motopod Facebook page. That would be facebook.com/motopod. You can always write into us if you want to have your letters written on the air or read on the air. Written on. We're going to write your letters on the air. We are getting tired, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And we look forward to hearing from you either way. You guys have a great week. Enjoy the racing this weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. See you, everybody.
Bye. I mean, quite lightly. One thing I should mention.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Oh, wait. What did you do that off the record?